Side 4, Pearls of Lutra by Brian Jakes. Continuing on page 152. Rollo drew patterns in the sand with his footfall.
Is that what they say, really? I don't suppose that you'd like to, maybe check the pond to see if there is actually a grimling, gray jaw, big fish living in there?
Glenner's reply was cheery and prompt.
Cost you a good pan of hot root and water shrimp soup, mates. I ain't risking me pretty young rudder and that pond for nothing. Oh, no.
Tansy grabbed Glenner's paw and shook it vigorously.
Done. One pan of soup for one pink pearl.
The otter cocked her head on one side quizzically.
What pink pearl? You never said aught about a pink pearl, matey. The big pink pearl that's lying at the bottom of that pond, Puddin'head, said Picknam. You don't think we wanted you just to amuse yourself in the water looking for a fish, did you? If a big fish was all we wanted to know about, why, we could have tossed in a dibbin to see if he got eaten. Then we'd know there was a big fish in there.
Chortling, Glenner shoved the mousemaid playfully.
Go on with your missy. You wouldn't sling no little dibbin in there. Right. Stand back, pals. If in the fish eats me, then give my soup to Skipper when he gets back from searching for your abbot.
Glenner took a running dive, slipping into the pond without a single splash. They glimpsed a thin stream of bubbles rising from her chin, then she was gone, lost in the greeny depths. Tansy paced up and down the bank, wondering how any beast could hold its breath for what seemed an eternity.
"Glenner should have been up by now," she said. "I wonder what she's doing down there. Hope she hasn't bumped into old Grimjaw."
Like an arrow from a bow, Glenner shot from the pond in a rush of water, springing up onto the bank beside them.
"Whew! There's two graylings down there, mates. I seen 'em."
Rollo's glasses slipped from his nose.
"Two big fish?"
Glenner shook herself, spraying them with a cascade of droplets.
"Aye, two, though one's long dead. I swam down to the bottom and didn't see no grayling, just some minnows, roach, and a gudgeon.
Then I spotted her, up alongside some boulders, a big, tidy-looking female grayling. She was guarding the bones of her mate. He must have been a big un, too, by the size of his frame. Looked like he died of old age, and the minnows nibbled his carcass clean."
Tansy clapped her paws with excitement.
"The pearl. Did you see the big pink pearl, Glenner?"
"No, miss. Afraid I didn't see no pearl. Does that mean I don't get me pot of soup?"
Rollo polished his glasses carefully.
"Sorry, not until we get the pink pearl."
Glenner winked at them, banging the last droplets from her sturdy rudder-like tail.
"So be it. We'll have to figure a way to keep the female grayling off my back so I can search proper for your pink pearl. Get me a good long staff. Ha! That punt pole will do. Now, let's get the punt over to this bank where the shallows are clear and stand it up on its side. No big fish is going to do Glenner out of a pot of hot root and water shrimp soup made in Redwall's kitchen."
Cracklin turned to Picknam, bewildered.
"What in the name of crab apples is that crazy otter up to?"
Tansy took them by the paws and headed for the punt.
"Don't ask silly questions. Whatever it is, I'm willing to give it a try. Come on, you two."
21. There were two hilltops close to the northern inlet of San Petra. Hardly a blade of grass stirred in the warm human morning as Rescanza, the fox, and the rebel crews stood on top of one hill, facing Ublaz and his guard of trident rats and monitors waiting on the other. The emperor moved first, descending alone into the valley between both hills. Rescanza watched him a moment, then followed suit. Ublaz sat down upon the grass, placing his only weapon, the silver dagger, on the ground in front of him. Rescanza unbuckled his belt with the 10 daggers it held and slung the lot down. Then he sat. The mad-eyed emperor smiled broadly.
"You carry a lot of blades, Rescanza."
The corsair fox matched his smile, but avoided his eyes.
"Aye, and I can use 'em too, Ublaz."
The emperor placed his silver dagger on top of Rescanza's weaponry.
"Then take mine as a token of our friendship, for we did not come here today to talk of using knives, my friend."
Rescanza flipped the dagger into the air and caught it deftly.
"Ah, a pretty toy, thank ye. Oh, I'm forgetting my manners. Exchange of gifts. Here's something for you.
A gauzy silken scarf landed wisp-like in the Pine Marten's lap. He picked it up and admired it.
Fine silk. Green. Suits me, too. Does this gift signify anything? Is there a meaning behind it?
Vasconza continued flipping the silver blade, watching it glitter in the sunlight.
Oh, it signifies right enough, Ublaz. What you do is you puts it over your face. That way you can see me, cost is only thin silk. But I won't be looking into your eyes.
Aye, I've heard all about those glims of yourn, and I don't intend staring into 'em, and losing control of my mind.
Ublaz bound the scarf lightly across his eyes, chuckling.
A wise move, Fox, very wise indeed. I can see I'm going to enjoy business dealings with you. Now, what is it you want?
This time Rasconza did not catch the dagger. It landed point down in the ground.
The captains are all dead, he said. I myself slew Baranka, but you know that. So I'm in charge of all the crews now, and I want peace. There's no profit in both sides killing each other off. Here's my proposition. You appoint me grand captain of all the ships in Arbor, and I'll serve you.
Forgive my asking, Ublaz interrupted, but how can you captain 6 ships at once?
Rasconza shook his head.
I don't want to captain all 6. Bloodkeel's a good craft. She's my old ship. I'll take her. The other captains I'll appoint from the crew beasts. But I'll be the boss captain, and they'll take their orders from me when we're at sea. You'll control all on land. This is the way it'll work. I'll increase the tribute each ship has to pay, and we'll split it 2 ways, me and you, and none the wiser. Of course, you'll have to get off from those timber stocks you're sitting on. There ain't no more good wood on San Petra, and the ships'll need wood for repairs. Agreed?
Ublaz spat on his paw and held it forth.
Agreed.
Rasconza also spat on his paw and clasped with the Pine Marten.
Aha! You won't regret this day's work, matey.
Behind the gauzy silk scarf, the mad eyes glinted dangerously.
I'm sure I won't, matey.
Then, removing the scarf, Ublaz stood and hailed his guard.
No beast will harm the crews. They can return to the harbor and use the taverns, or board their ships as they please. You are not to fight with them. There is a truce. If you have any complaints against them, report to Rasconza. He is their leader. Disobey, and you will answer to me. I am your emperor, Ublaz. I have spoken.
Late that evening, the vermin crews roistered and sang in the harbor area of San Petra. Only the Fox Rasconza sat alone, brooding in the captain's cabin aboard Bloodkeel. Once he had been a mere boatswain on this same vessel. Now he was captain-in-chief of 6 ships. But a nagging thought had entered his mind as he went back over the day's events. It had all been too simple. Ublaz had agreed to his terms too readily. Why? Ublaz sat upon his throne sipping wine, satisfied that he had defeated 7 enemies in short time. Now he had only the Fox to contend with. Easy game. The Emperor liked easy games, though he often cheated to win. Martin and his friends had taken to the ditch, following Skipper as he tracked Lask Frildur and his company through Mossflower. The Otter chieftain halted and cast about, looking for a sign, saying,
"Well, mates, old Lask's learning a bit of sense. See here. They've tried to cover their tracks. Look, paw marks. I reckon this is where they've climbed out of the ditch and probably headed west or yon field into the woods."
Martin inspected the scratch marks carefully.
"I think you're right, Skip. Once in the woods, they'd find the river and follow it to the sea."
With a leap and a bound, Klecky was out of the ditch into the field.
"Come on, chaps. After the scurvy bounders, what?"
A slingstone whizzed out of nowhere, bouncing close to the hare's footpaw. He jumped back into the ditch with great alacrity.
"Ambush, chaps! Blinkin' nerve of the bottle-nosed blighters!"
The warrior mouse peered over the ditch-top, across the sunlit field, still sparkling with dew, to the shaded woodland fringe. There was no visible movement anywhere.
As you said, Skip, the lizard is learning sense. He's left a rear guard behind to slow us up. They're in the woods somewhere. Too well hidden for us to see.
Geralt provided a swift solution to the problem. With your permission, sir, I'll fly myself up high and see if I can't spot the old vermin.
Before Martin could agree, the barn owl winged out over the field. As Geralt swooped low towards the trees, he was struck by a heavy slingstone. He fell in a jumble of feathers. Immediately, three gulls came screeching out of the tree cover and attacked Geralt as he lay dazed upon the ground. Regardless of their own safety, Martin, Skipper, and Clecky charged from the ditch, roaring, "Red Wall!" A monitor and four sea rats loosed slingstones at them as they ran. The three friends separated, ducking and dodging, but still going forward. A well-hurled javelin from Skipper took one of the gulls out. Then, with only his loaded sling, the otter chieftain made a mad dash and flung himself upon the monitor. Before the sea rats could come to the lizard's aid, Martin was among them with his sword. Clecky dropped his bow and arrows, and, diving at the remaining two seagulls, he lashed out fiercely with his lethal long legs, protecting the fallen owl with his body. The encounter was short and savage, with Martin and his friends emerging victorious. Though one of the sea rats and a seagull escaped and fled off into the woodlands. But winning had its price. Geralt had been severely injured by the slingstone and the ravaging beaks of the gulls. Clecky made him comfortable, whilst Martin attended to Skipper. The otter had slain the carnivorous reptile with only a loaded sling and his natural strength. Skipper sat gasping, his back against a sycamore. Martin was horrified at the awful wounds inflicted by the monitor's teeth and raking claws. The otter winced as he grinned broadly, making a joke of the whole thing.
I don't think I could manage to fight another one of those rascals today, mate.
Martin tore his cloak into strips, calling to Clecky.
How is Geralt? Is he all right?
The barn owl flapped a wing limply.
I'll live, sir, though me old wing is as much use as feathers on a fish, so 'tis.
Clecky was using the last of Geralt's sanicle on his friend's wounds.
Be still, you boulder-beaked curmudgeon. Here, put your talon on this, while I bandage it, you great feather-faced frump. Got yourself in a nice old mess, mulatto, haven't you, what?
When the two casualties were cleaned up and bandaged, Martin looked at them despairingly.
You two aren't fit to carry on. We'll have to get you back to Redwall and some proper nursing.
Skipper struggled upright, glaring fiercely at his friend.
Oh, no, you won't, matey. Your job is to get the abbot and that little bank bowl free. As for me and this bird, we can make our own way back to the abbey, can't we, matey?
Geralt wobbled his way over to Skipper, and they stood supporting each other.
Sure, will you look at the pair of us now? Between us we make an owl otter, whatever that is. But don't you worry, sir. As me old mother used to say, the road may be long, but it doesn't get any shorter by standin' gossipin'. So we're off to Redwall now. Look after me friend Clecky, and treat him kindly, but don't turn your back on him if there's food about. Oh, no, sir.
The hare sniffed.
Thank you for those few kind words, you feather-bottomed old fraud. See you back at the jolly old abbey in a few days, what?
Martin could not suppress a smile as the two casualties staggered off across the field, wing and paw, chattering animatedly as they hobbled along together.
Ouch! I think I'm going to need great pots of soup and lots of elderberry wine before I'm right again, Geralt.
Isn't that a fact, sir? And as for myself, I think pasties and puddens with a barrel or two of the good October ale will put the sheen back upon me feathers, indeed, so they will.
Clecky twitched his ears fondly, waving goodbye to his companion.
Huh. Do you know I'd swear that chap's faking? Got himself wounded just so's he can fill his face at Redwall and not share any of it with me. Typical of the blighter.
Martin gave the hare's tunic a sharp tug.
Remember what Geralt's old mother used to say. The road may be long, but it doesn't get any shorter by standing gossiping. Come on, let's get after Lask Frildor.
22. Twilight was falling over the sea, and red sunrays cast a fierce path across the ebbing tide off the coast of Mossflower Country. Aboard Waveworm, the ferret Romska leaned over the stern, scanning the darkening shore in company with her steers-rat Bladetail.
Where in the name of gut-rubbins have those seagulls got to? She grumbled. I only told him to fly back and see if Lask was on his way.
Bladetail spat reflectively into the water.
Mayhap old Lask kept him with him for some purpose.
He turned and cast a glance towards the two prisoners, huddled together on a heap of sail sheet amidships.
Those monitors are pestering your little bowl again, Captain.
Viola hid her face against the abbot's robe, shaking with fear, as a monitor poked his evil head close to her, grinning and grinding his teeth, enjoying the vole maid's distress.
Tased, vole, you will tased nice.
Against her instincts, Romska had found herself feeling protective towards Viola and the abbot. She had spent the whole day keeping the lizards from tormenting the captives, and suddenly her temper rose. Whipping out her sword, she strode up to the unsuspecting monitor and kicked him sprawling. Belaboring the reptile with the flat of her blade, Romska snarled,
"Keep your foul-smelling snout away from the maid, scale scum!"
The monitor scrambled upright, teeth bared, claws raised defiantly.
"I do as I please, ferret. Lask Frildur gives me my orders."
He made as if to push Romska out of the way, but the corsair moved with lightning speed, bullying the monitor backward to the rail.
"Well, here's an order from me, scale-brain," she snarled. "Die!"
With a swift thrust, she ran him through and tipped him overboard. Then she whirled on the other monitors, pointing her sword.
"That goes for the rest of you, thick-headed lizards. Stay away from the maid, or you'll join your mate there."
Abbot Durrell whispered softly to Viola, "Romska is not totally against us. We may have a friend." For a moment it looked as if the remaining monitors were about to rush Romska, but a sharp whistle from Bladetail brought the rest of the vermin crew on deck, fully armed. The corsair captain grinned invitingly at the lizards.
"Come on, your beauties. Want to try your luck with us, do you?"
She baited them.
"I'll have your guts for garters and your tripes for supper. Ahoy, waveworm, throw us a line. We're coming aboard."
Bladetail saw the group standing in the shallows. "It's Lask Frildur and the others at last." Shivering from the water, Lask pulled himself on board Waveworm. He glared at Romska, demanding,
"What's going on? Why is a monitor dead in the waters?"
The ferret turned her blade point towards the monitor general.
"I slew him for interfering with the prisoners. I'm captain aboard this ship. You took your time getting here. What kept you?"
Lask pointed back to the shore.
"Creatures from Redwall are after us. I left 5 and the 3 gulls to hold them off. I do not know how many they are."
Romska snapped orders to her crew.
"Up anchor and let her drift further offshore for safety. See, Lask, I told you those Redwallers were fighters."
Grath Longfletch crouched low in her longboat, watching Waveworm from a distance. It was drifting from its original mooring, further out to sea. A long shout, like a war cry, rang out from the shore.
"Eulalia!"
In the falling light, Grath saw the steer's rat Bladetail topple over the stern, pierced by an arrow from the shore. A stoat leapt up on the stern, whirling a slingshot to retaliate. Grath decided to help out. Grabbing her bow, she placed a shaft on the string and whipped it back. Lask watched in surprise as an arrow seemed to grow out of the stoat's skull. Pandemonium broke out aboard Waveworm as the vermin staggered backward and fell to the deck. Lask Frildur dashed into his cabin and slammed the door, and the other monitors ran for cover. Slashing the air with her blade, Romska roared out orders.
"Take her out deeper, where arrows can't reach. Make some sail that'll move us along faster. Break out some boat hooks and long pikes, in case they tries to board us. Stir your stumps!"
Abbot Durrell acted then. Lifting Viola, he shuffled to the rail and threw her over the side, shouting,
"Swim, little one! Make for the shore!"
A sea rat grabbed the abbot, throwing a noosed rope over him. He bound the old mouse's paws to his side. Then he dragged him to the mast, where he made the rope fast. Romska dashed to the rail, shouting,
"Get the maid out of the water! Look lively!"
A sea rat ran half-heartedly to the rail with a rope. He screamed and fell wounded by a green-feathered arrow, yelling,
"Longboat to the port side, headin' this way!"
Grath Longfletch laid aside her weapon, racing toward the small figure floundering in the water as the outgoing tide carried it seaward. Gripping the little tiller tight, the otter sent her craft skimming between the waves. Viola was pulled by the current. She swallowed seawater, scrabbling at Waveworm's prow as she drifted in front of it, blinded by stinging salt water. Graff was close enough to see now. It was either a mouse or a vole. No sea rat this. Risking everything on a desperate gamble, the otter lashed the tiller to her stern seat with the aft line. She saw the enormous prow of Waveworm looming up, but regardless of danger, she grabbed the vole maid's apron back with both paws and pulled her clear of the advancing ship's bow.
Bump! Crack!
Waveworm caught the longboat, ramming it amidships, and turning the small craft momentarily over on its side. Graff was in the sea, with Viola clinging to her. Striking away from the ship, she shouted, "Take a good deep breath, and hold on to me!" Swimming as only a powerful grown otter can, Graff Longfletch dived and turned underwater, streaking away from Waveworm towards the shore. Viola Bankbowl closed both eyes and held her breath, dark water rushing past her, as the otter sped them both out of danger. Then panic overtook Viola. The breath ran from her in a stream of bubbles, and she began swallowing water. The next thing she knew, a paw was patting her back, as Clecky spoke to her in a reassuring voice.
"Deary me, missy. Fancy trying to swallow all the sea in one go. Come on, give it back. Cough it all up now, you'll be fine."
Between coughs and spurts of seawater, Viola could see her rescuer introducing herself to Martin. Waveworm was now well out of reach. Graff crouched in the lee of some rocks with Martin, Clecky, and Viola. The warrior mouse watched the Corsair vessel, saying, "Let's hope she's dropped anchor there. Maybe tomorrow we'll be able to do something about Abbot Durrell." Clecky left off patting Viola's back. "I think we're on a loser at the moment, old chap. They're holding all the acorns in this little game, what? Now, if we had a ship—"
"Stay here. I'll see what's happened to my boat," Graff said, and she was off, running down the beach and disappearing into the sea.
Clecky shrugged and raised an eyebrow at Martin.
"Odd sort of gel, that'n. Fights like mad to get ashore. Then run straight back into the bally water?"
23. At the edge of Redwall Abbey Pond, the punt had been hauled out of the water and dragged around to the sandy shallows. Glenner the otter explained her plan to the four friends.
"You know what they always say about the simplest plans, mates? They're the best uns. We stand this punt up on its side first. Well, come on, lend a paw there. I can't do it alone."
It was an old flat-bottomed craft, and quite heavy. They stood paw-deep, grunting and gasping, as they tried to lift the punt clear of the water. Alma the Badger Mother was out for a stroll around the grounds with three Dibbons, the Mole Babes Gerbol and Diggum, and the little squirrel Arvin. They wandered across to the pond. Alma watched the curious proceedings, then inquired,
"I don't know what you're up to, Rollo, but do you need any help?"
Placing both paws on his back, the old recorder straightened up.
"Ooh, my aching bones!
We'd be extremely grateful if you'd help us to stand this punt on its side in the shallows."
Little Arvin rolled his smock sleeves up briskly.
"Stand aside, Raleigh. We do it easy. Come on, moles. We show 'em how to lift a boat. Us only lickle, but we's powerful strongly."
As the three Dibbons charged into the shallows, Alma scooped them neatly up in her huge paws and set them back on the bank.
"Keep an eye on these rogues, Tansy. Every beast stand clear now."
Then the big badger set the punt on its side with a single powerful heave.
"There. Is that what you wanted? What do you expect to do with the boat in this position?"
Glenner picked up the long punting pole.
"There's one of them pink pearls somewhere on the pond bottom, Marm, but there's also a big old female grayling, so I'm going to dive down there and chase her into the shallows with this pole. The plan is to drop the punt upside down on her, so the fish'll be trapped. Then I can search for the pearl without that big old grayling bothering me. You'll all need to stand on the boat. Your weight will stop the fish escaping. It should work."
At the mention of a big fish, the Dibbons became excited. They danced about on the bank, squealing and shouting,
"Hur, hur! Oil swim down with 'ee, and chasey girt fisher beast. And I bite its tail off, chomp, like dat, with my big sharp teefs. Hur, aye! And oil sit under e boat, and older goot fisher beast hard and toit, so he don't hurt you em creeters.
Alma shook a warning paw at them. "You'll stay with me and keep tight hold of my paws, or I'll tan your tails and send you off to bed."
All the helpers were huddled behind the boat. Alma poked her head around the side and called to Glenner, who was wading through the reeds at the pond's far edge.
"We're all ready here. Down you go, Glenner.
Be careful."
The otter submerged into the crystal-clear water, holding the pole like a lance in front of her. The female grayling lurked in the boulders at the deep center of the pond, unwilling to move away from the skeletal remains of her long-dead mate. Glenner tapped her gently on the head with the pole, but she refused to budge. However, a second tap brought the big fish's dorsal fin upright, and she became aggressive. Like a flash, she charged, but the otter fended her off skillfully, tapping away sharply with the butt end of the pole and bumping the grayling on her head, sides, and tail until she ceased her attack and turned in retreat. Glenner was right after her, urging her along, shepherding her with the punting pole. Alma peered around the side of the punt.
"Here she comes. Get ready now. When I say push..."
Tansy took a quick peek. The big female grayling made a brave sight. Wriggling backward into the shallows, the great purply-sheened body bucked and quivered as it snapped and fought the teasing pole. The high, long-based dorsal fin stood clear of the water like a spined steamer. Iridescent scales flashed in the sunlight, splashing water left and right.
"Now push!"
Alma shouted. The punt hit the water with a flat thwack, landing over the fish like a huge mouth closing. Caught up in the excitement of the moment, Rollo hitched up his habit and roared,
"Jump on top! Jump on top! Quick! Every beast on top!"
They scrambled on top of the upturned punt, their combined weight causing it to bed firmly into the sand of the shallows. Sudden imprisonment made the big female fish go berserk. She leaped and bucked, whacking the bottom and sides of the punt furiously, throwing herself wildly in all directions. Tansy clung to Rollo, Picknum clung to Cracklin, and all four then clung to the most solid beast around, Alma. The badger mother had her paws full trying to keep hold of the dibbons, who chortled helplessly, wriggling and skipping across the bottom of the punt as if it were all a wonderful game. Under the grayling's onslaught, the punt shuddered and quivered. Tansy was amazed at the mad strength of a single fish. She stood swaying on the thrumming timbers, holding Arvin's paw tightly, and said,
"If Glenner doesn't hurry up, the grayling's going to wreck this punt and send us all into the water."
Alma eyed the upturned punt bottom doubtfully. "It's a big, powerful fish, right enough. These old timbers aren't going to last very long if it carries on the way it's going."
"Ahoy, mates! Let loose the old fish!"
Glenner stood in the reedy shallows at the far side, waving to them. En masse, they leapt off and hurried up onto the bank. Alma went wading back in and lifted the punt slightly. With a whooshing rush of water, the grayling shot out and was lost in a sandy swirl. She made straight for the safety of the boulders at the pond bottom, reunited with the frame of her dead partner. Glittering wetly, the rose-colored pearl caught the afternoon sunlight as Glenner tossed it high in the air, catching it deftly as it fell.
"Don't throw it about like that,"
Rollo called sternly.
"It's not a plaything, Glenner. Bring it here this instant, and don't drop it."
The otter popped the pearl into her mouth.
"Warm more upon a soap,"
she said around it. Alma looked at Tansy and shrugged.
"What's the beast talking about?"
Glenner dropped the pearl from her mouth into Tansy's waiting paws.
"I said, where's my pan of soup?"
Picknum pounded the otter's back happily.
"You'll get your pan of soup, you old water walloper. Well done."
Arvin picked up a small round pebble and gave it to Picknum.
"Me have soup, too," he said.
"Where exactly did you find the pearl, Glenner?"
asked Tansy. Glenner sat down on the mossy bank, shaking her head sadly.
"You'll never believe it, matey, but it was that pearl what killed the old grayling. It was stuck in the bones where his throat once was."
The hedgehog maid stared at the beautiful orb resting in her paw.
"So that was it. Firmald must have tossed this pearl into the pond, and Grimjaw thought it was food and tried to swallow it. But the pearl lodged in his throat and choked him. I don't suppose that was what Firmald meant to do, but unwittingly she killed Grimjaw. Deary me, she finally did defeat her old foe."
Rollo sat down beside Tansy.
"Cheer up, missy. At least we've got the pearl."
"Don't look so unhappy. The greedy old fish slew himself, really."
Tansy continued staring at the pearl and said,
It's not the fish I'm unhappy about, Rollo. I was just recalling the line of Fermal's poem which says, "Patience pays but once this time." This pearl is the one payment. We've got no piece of paper with clues to lead us on to the fourth pearl. What do we do next?
Dig in the Mole Babe's reasoning was simple.
Do now? Us'n's makey girt pot o' soup, for he otter, marm.
Rollo patted the little creature's velvety head.
A capital idea, my friend. A good feed will help us all to think a little more clearly.
Tansy was not convinced, however. She wandered glumly back across the tranquil lawns towards the abbey. However, the irrepressible Picknum and Cracklin could not endure their companion's long face, and they danced around her, singing to lighten her mood.
"Pick me flowers for Redwall, to grace the tables of Great Hall. Go out upon the grassy ground where flowers bloom all round. Periwinkle, primrose, pimpernel, buttercup, burnet, and bluebell, arrowhead, anemone, asphodel, tansy's a flower as well. Campion, cowslip, columbine, speedwell, spurge, and snowdrop pine, toadflax, thrift, and also thyme, but pretty tansy's mine. Foxglove, figwort, feverfew, harebell, hemlock, hawkweed, too, forget-me-nots with petals blue. Sweet tansy, I'll pick you."
Arvin plucked a buttercup and made Tansy bend so he could place it behind her ear. Then the little squirrel leapt onto her back and sang raucously the only part of the song he could remember.
"Sweet Tansy, I pick you."
The hedgehog maid could not stay gloomy in such company. She seized Arvin and tickled him soundly.
"You little maggot, roaring down my poor ear like that, you've deafened me."
Arvin shrieked with helpless laughter, trying to wriggle free of the tickling paws.
"Yee hee hee, let me go, hee 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 hee. Tansy not tickle me, yee hee hee."
Tansy continued tickling, pretending Arvin really had deafened her.
"Eh, what's that? Speak up, sir, I can't hear you."
Trooping into Cavern Hole, they made themselves comfortable. Friar Higgle strode in behind them, swinging a ladle, his face a picture of mock severity.
"Some beast needin' a pot of water shrimp, not root soup," he said.
Glenner held up her paw hopefully.
"Aye, me, sir. I was promised the soup by—"
The good friar cut her short.
"Well, I don't know nothing about any promises, stream dog."
Higgle watched Glenner's face fall mournfully and smiled. A rap on the table from his ladle brought Teasel in. Pulling a serving trolley up to the table, she indicated the bubbling pot.
"A little bird told us you might be needin' this."
The soup was so hot and spicy that only Glenner continued to refill her bowl. Otters are known to be very partial to water shrimp and hot root soup. The rest were well contented to cool their mouths with strawberry cordial and do full justice to a plum and apple crumble, supplemented by a large platter of red currant tarts, which Teasel had baked for them. Tansy brought the scallop shell case out and placed the third pearl in it, alongside the other two that had been found. Alma held the open shell up so that it caught the candlelight and admired the three rosy orbs.
"The tears of all oceans," mused Rollo. "Beautiful, are they not?
But without the other three, they are quite useless. If we are to bargain for our abbot and Viola, all six are needed. Though I would give 10 times that amount to have our friends back here safe."
Alma closed the shell and fastened its clasp firmly.
"Aye, what price treasures when Redwallers are in danger. I dread to think of Martin and our friends out somewhere, risking their lives against evil beasts. I wish there was something we could do to help them."
Tansy placed the shell in its bag and fastened the bag to her apron strings.
"That's what's making me feel so bad, Alma. There are no more clues to the other three pearls. It would help them if we could find even the tiniest hint to set us on the trail again."
Rollo settled himself wearily upon a wall edge.
"I think it's time to stop talking and start thinking."
After the activity at the pond and the good food following, heads began to nod and eyelids started drooping in the warmth and quiet of Cavern Hole. First Rollo, followed by Alma and Glenner, then Tansy and the other two young maids, Picknum and Cracklin. Little Arvin would have drifted into sleep, but his head bumped the table as he leaned forward. Cramming tiny paws into his eyes, he rubbed them until he was wide awake. The two mole babes, Diggum and Gerbil, were snuggled down on a rush mat. Arvin woke them, and, smiling mischievously, he pushed and pulled the dozy pair up the stairs into Great Hall. Tweaking the mole babe's snouts none too gently, Arvin roused them into full alertness.
"Come on," he whispered fiercely. "All a big and sleepy dozin. We got portent work."
Gerbil blinked owlishly and sat on his fat little tail. "Nothin' be as important as sleepin' to a growin' choild." Diggum, who had entered heartedly into the conspiracy, pulled Gerbil upright, wagging a small digging claw at him. "You'm not but a girt foozletop mole. What he be wantin' usins to do, Zer Harbin? We goin' to find the other free pearls for Tansy?
Hoor! Good idea! Where do we think pearls be hidden?"
"Gah, you a maggot, Gerbil. How I knows where pearls be?"
"Ber, you'm don't know? Then where do usin' start lookin'?"
Arvin thought about this for a moment, narrowing his eyes and whipping his bushy tail back and forth. Then suddenly he brightened.
"Up a stairs, where no beast find us. That's where."
Giggling and pulling at one another's tunics, the three Dibbons clambered up the dormitory steps, pushing and shoving to be first to the top. It was a good game, and whatever search did turn out to be a game, it was all good fun to the three Abbey babes. Tansy turned over, pulling her cape around her. Through the foggy haze of sleep's corridor, she recognized the heroic figure looming towards her. It could be none other than Martin the Warrior of ancient times. His smile radiated tranquility. His voice was warm as a far-off bell on summer noontide.
"You are troubled, little one?"
The hedgehog maid sighed deeply in her sleep.
"I must find the next clue if I am to continue my search for the pearls. But I don't know where to begin looking."
Martin's lips never appeared to move, though his voice echoed around Tansy's mind.
"Find the three babes, and you will know."
The vision faded, and Tansy slept peacefully on. Cracklin was wakened by an odd sound.
Shloop, shloop, shloop.
The funny noise continued with monotonous regularity. Cracklin opened her eyes and sat up slowly. Glenner withdrew her head from the soup pot, licking her whiskers and chin.
"Not like hot-root soup, matey. Tastes just as good cold as it does warm. I'd eat it any time, night or day."
Gradually, the rest of the company awoke. Alma stretched mightily.
"Ooh! What time is it? A fine bunch we are, lying about napping like a pile of Dibbons."
The word set a train of thought going in Tansy's mind.
"Dibbons? Where are Diggum, Gerbil, and Arvin?"
She jumped up and began searching Cavern Hole. Glenner licked the last soup drops from her chin as she watched Tansy.
"What's the panic? Dibbons can't leave the Abbey. They're probably playing somewheres close by."
The hedgehog maid checked under the table.
"I saw Martin the Ancient Warrior in my dreams. He told me to look for the three babes, and I would know."
Alma peered into an empty barrel standing in a corner.
"What would you know?" she said.
Tansy strode resolutely for the steps leading to Great Hall.
"Where the clue to the next pearl is, of course. Come on, we've got to find those Dibbons."
24. Rascanza called the two sea rats, Baltur and Gancho, to his ship, and the three of them leaned over the stern rail, speaking in low murmurs. The fox looked across the sunlit harbor, up to the palace of Ublaz. He knew the mad-eyed emperor was probably having them watched. Rascanza kept his face straight and his voice level.
"I don't like it, mates. Ublaz gave in too easy. That's not like him. I tell you, that'n's a dangerous beast."
Baltur glanced sideways at Rascanza.
"So what are you going to do about it?" "Well, I ain't hanging about in this harbor, waiting for Ublaz to make his move. So here's me plan. I says we sail away from San Petra tonight on the flood tide, and once we're shut of this place, we don't come back."
Gancho drummed a paw nervously on the rail.
"But Ublaz will see us, if and we all pulls anchor and sails at once. It's too risky. He'll have laid plans to stop us."
The fox shrugged.
"That's a chance we'll have to take, mates. The best bet is to let the crews know secretly, pass the word about quiet-like. I'm appointing both of you captains. You'll get your own ships. We'll wait until dark, then at my signal, slip off, ship by ship. Are you with me, mates?
The two sea rats nodded, fired by their sudden promotions to captaincy.
Baltur spoke for them both.
We're with you, Raskanza. Give us our orders.
Word passed among the wave vermin lounging around the taverns and harbor of San Petra.
Keep it under your hat, messmate. Raskanza says we're sailing tonight when it's dark.
Sailing tonight? What, you mean all of us?
Keep your voice down, bucko. You just pass it on nice and easy. Every beast to be back aboard their old ships by sunset.
Gradually the whole key area was rife with whispered messages being passed from one to another. In the late afternoon a grizzled sea rat with a patch on one eye and a rusty cutlass at his side stumped out of a tavern. He left the area as soon as he was sure no beast was watching. Two monitors ushered the sea rat into the Emperor's throne room. Ublaz watched as the sea rat cast aside his disguise and picked up his trident.
Tell me what you heard. Are they planning to attack or run?
The trident rat stood rigid as the pine marten's eyes blazed into his brain. Then he told all he had heard. Afternoon shadows were lengthening into the hour before twilight as Ublaz headed a powerful force of monitors and trident rats to the jetty. Raskanza stood amidships on his vessel in company with Baltur. The sea rat watched Ublaz approaching, and his paws began quivering.
It's the Emperor. He knows what we're up to.
Raskanza smiled, showing no sign of alarm. He dug his claws sharply into Baltur's side.
Shut your gob, rat, and stop flapping. I'll see to this.
The pine marten cut a handsome figure, clad in gold silks topped by a white turban set with a feather and greenstone jewel. He appeared to be unarmed. Ublaz smiled, greeting Raskanza pleasantly.
So, how is my chief captain today? Everything shipshape?
Raskanza matched the Emperor's smile and manner immediately.
Never better, your mightiness, and pray what brings you to our humble ship on this fine day?
Ublaz whipped out the green silken gauze the fox had given him. He winked at Raskanza before binding it lightly around his eyes.
Ha! Nearly forgot my manners there. You've probably heard that I hypnotized a poisonous water serpent. I've got to be careful of these magic eyes of mine. Don't want to go putting any spells on my trusted chief captain now, do I?
Raskanza felt a shudder pass through him. Instinctively his paw roamed to the silver dagger Ublaz had given him.
"Thank you, sire. But I'm sure you never came all the way down here to tell me that. Just what do you want?"
Ublaz stooped, looking at the stern of the vessel at water level.
"Nothing, really. I merely thought it was about time I started making good my promises to you. I presume that now would be a good time to start overhauling our fleet. My carpenters will do the work. We'll start by replacing all your tillers and rudders. I've got fine stout timber to make new ones."
Still smiling, but fuming inwardly, Raskanza was forced to stand helplessly by as trident rats and monitors swarmed over his ship, removing the tiller and rudder, rendering the vessel useless. When the other vessels had been similarly treated, Ublaz had six trident rats line up on the jetty in front of Raskanza. He pointed them out one by one.
Galdra, Fens, Orlug, Carrot, Somgil, and Creuth. These are your six new captains, all trustworthy creatures. Bow to your chief.
The six trident rats bowed respectfully to Raskanza. The fox nodded formally to them, doing a quick mental calculation.
Six, you say? But we only have six ships, he said.
Ublaz smiled winningly at his adversary.
Ah, yes, but you command them all. Soon they'll be good as new, and when we've replaced the tillers and rudders, we'll see about new masts for our fleet. I bid you good day, my chief captain.
Ublaz removed the green gauze from his eyes and turned to go. Baltur began arguing with Raskanza.
I thought you made me and Gancho captains. What right does Mad-Eyes have putting his own captains in our place?
Ublaz wheeled about, fixing the sea rat with a piercing stare.
You there! What is your name?
Baltur appeared dumbfounded for a moment, unable to tear his eyes from the gaze of Ublas.
"I'm called Baltur," he said.
"And how long have you been a sea rat, Baltur?"
"Long as I can remember, sire."
"So you like the sea, eh?"
"I likes it well enough, sire."
Ublas chuckled, both eyes boring into the hapless vermin.
"Good. Then perhaps you would like to try a swim now."
The brief interview was at an end. Ublas turned and strode away, followed by his army, several of whom were lugging the tillers and rudders of the ships with them. Behind him there was a splash, as Baltur threw himself into the sea. Rascanza watched two corsairs pull the spluttering Baltur up onto the jetty, and signaled to one of the new Trident Rat captains.
"You there. Orlug, is it? Step aboard, mate. This'll be your ship from now on. I'll show you around."
That evening, just after sunset, Sagittar entered the Emperor's throne room and placed a sword down in front of Ublas. The Pine Marten glanced at the stained blade.
"What is this thing, and why do you bring it here?"
Sagittar measured her words carefully.
"Mightiness, I was leading the evening harbor patrol when the fox Rascanza gave this to me and bade me bring it to you. He said to tell you that one of your new captains, Orlug, was given the sword by him in honor of your appointing Orlug captain, but unfortunately Orlug was unused to wearing a sword, and he tripped and fell upon the blade, slaying himself. Rascanza says that you have no need to appoint another captain. He will be master of his own ship." "Those were his words, sire."
Much to the astonishment of Sagittar, the Emperor burst into gales of hearty laughter. The Trident Rat stood at attention until her master's merriment subsided. Ublas wiped his eyes on a sateen kerchief and took several deep breaths.
"Go back to the harbor. Tell Rascanza I send him my compliments. Oh, and say also that there has been a little mishap on my part, not quite as serious as the loss of a captain. Unfortunately, my clumsy monitors dropped the tillers and rudders, and they are all broken. Without them to use as patterns, it will take considerably longer to make new ones. But I will tell my carpenters to do their best. Go now."
Long after midnight, Rascanza sat in his cabin, sharing a flask of seaweed grog with Baltur and Goncho. The fox had just finished telling them of his latest encounter with Sagittar, messenger of the Emperor. Goncho hurled his beaker at the bulkhead and pounded the table.
"First he cripples our vessels, then he destroys all the rudders and tillers. Ublas has got us like a fish in a barrel," rot his eyes.
Rascanza poured a fresh beaker for the irate sea rat.
"No, he ain't. I told old Sagittar to take this message back to him. I've still got 5 of those new captains safe with us here, so I hope that we'll have new tillers and rudders within 5 days. 5 captains and 5 days. Maybe they're all as clumsy as that rat Orlug. Who knows? Something awful might happen to each of 'em, 1 a day. And we don't want that to happen, do we? 'Cause then I'd have to give you buckos your jobs back as ship's masters. You 2 and 3 others.
Rascanza clinked beakers with Baltur and Goncho, their roaring laughter ringing out across the dark flood tide. Rascanza was sure that he had won the next round in the murderous game. 25. Martin crouched with Klecki and Viola behind a small outcrop of rocks on the shoreline. It was the hour before dawn, still and calm. All activity aboard Waveworm seemed to have ceased. She rode smoothly at anchor, too far out to be reached by bowshot. Klecki's keen eyes picked up movement further along the beach at the water's edge.
"I say, there's our otter chum, pulling and hauling on her boat. It looks in jolly bad shape, if you ask me, what?"
Martin turned to Viola, who was shivering fitfully after her ordeal in the sea.
"Stay here, little one. Klecki and I are going to help the otter to beach her boat. If any danger threatens while we're away, leave these rocks and hide in the woodlands, do you understand?"
The vole maid's teeth were chattering so hard she could only nod. Stooping low, Martin and Klecki hurried along the tide line, all the time keeping a weather eye on Waveworm. Grath Longfletch was glad of their help, and among them the three creatures hauled the longboat across the shore back to the rock cover. Grath surveyed the damage ruefully, saying, "She's stoved in bad amidships, and there's not a lot I can do without the proper materials to fix her up. I have even lost my provisions in the sea." Klecki slumped down mournfully next to Viola.
"Starvin', wet, cold, tired, what? I've been in worse places, but I'm blowed if I can remember where they were."
Martin held up his paw for silence.
"Listen."
Grath had heard the sounds, too. She grabbed for her bow and arrows, which had mercifully survived the encounter with Waveworm.
"Some beast coming downstream. Get your heads down, mates."
Stealthily, the otter peered landward, over the rocks into the breaking dawn. Then she laughed aloud with relief.
"Ha-ha! It's Logalog and the Gwasim!"
Swift as arrows, six logboats were skimming downstream from the woodlands to the shore. When they caught sight of Grath, the shrews whooped gruffly, flinging themselves into the stream shallows and wading ashore with open paws. Logalog was first to pound his otter friend's back.
"Grath Longfletch, you old water dog!
Logalog, you little stream walloper!
Don't tell me you've wrecked that barnacle-crusted cockle-shell again, Grath.
Good job we happened along.
Hi, Martin.
Martin of Redwall."
The warrior mouse chuckled joyfully as Gwasim Shrews crowded round, shaking his paws.
"Logalog, old friend. Dabby, Curlo, Dimple, what a pleasure it is to see your faces again."
Klecki pointed to himself and Viola.
"Pay no heed to us, chaps. We're only a couple of butterflies hanging about waiting for summer, aren't we, my dear?"
A fire was built on the sand behind the rocks, and Gwasim cooks busied themselves while shrew maids outfitted Viola Bankbowl in one of their smocks. Curlo and Dabby got a repair gang together and began straightaway fixing Grath's longboat. Logalog sat by the fire with Martin and Klecki, discussing their position. When he heard about the ambush in the ditch, the shrew chieftain looked thoughtful.
"We found a sea rat wandering lost upstream," he said. "My mates have got him under guard over there. I wonder if he can tell us where they're planning to take your abbot." "Ahoy, mates! Bring that vermin over to me."
Bound and gagged, a dispirited sea rat was hauled up in front of the shrew chieftain. Martin recognized him instantly.
"That's the villain who escaped after ambushing us. We slew the rest of them, but this one got away."
Grath Longfetch strode up. Borrowing a knife from one of the cooks, she cut the sea rat's gag and the rope that bound his paws. Then, notching a green-feathered shaft to her great bow, Grath nodded meaningly at the terrified sea rat.
"Get running," she snarled.
The sea rat took one look at the grim-faced otter and her lethal weapon, and fell down on all fours, pleading and sobbing.
"You're gonna kill me. I know you are. Mercy, I beg you."
Grath seized the creature roughly, hauling him upright.
"I'm giving you a chance, scum. That's more than you did for my family when you murdered him. I'm Grath Longfletch, last of the Holt of Lutra. Remember it. Now run."
Martin placed himself between Grath and the sea rat, saying,
"You can't kill him, friend. We need him to give us information. He's valuable to us."
Grath's voice trembled as she replied,
"I like you, Martin of Redwall. You're a warrior born. But this sea rat is a coward and a murderer. I'm sworn to avenge my family, so step aside, Martin. I don't want to hurt you."
"Then you'll have to hurt us both, matey."
Logalog stood up alongside Martin and spoke gently to the otter.
"Grath, you're letting revenge rob you of your senses. Put aside the bow and shaft now. There's a good beast."
"Martin's right, and you know it, friend."
Slowly Grath lowered her bow and shot the arrow into the sand between her footpaws. The sea rat gave a moan of relief. Grath smiled regretfully at the two creatures facing her.
"I'm sorry, Martin. You're right. Logalog, you sound more like my father than any creature I have ever known. Forgive me."
The warrior mouse patted Grath's paw.
"There's nothing to forgive, friend. I'd have done the same in your place. Now, how about some breakfast by the fire while we question this wave vermin and make our plans for the day?"
Viola and Klecki sat with the boat repair crew around their fire, watching a pot of pine resin bubbling. The bowl maid sipped steaming vegetable and seafood soup from a scallop-shell bowl, and devoured hot shrew bread in a manner far removed from her former prissy self. Curlo winked at her.
"Tastes good, don't it?" she said.
Viola nodded gratefully as the shrew refilled the shell for her.
"Almost as good as the taste of freedom."
"Oh, poor Abbot Turl. I hope they haven't harmed him. He risked his life to help me escape from that horrible ship and those awful lizards. Do you think there's a chance that we can rescue him?"
Klecki bent his long ears toward the other fire, munching delicious shrew bread as he spoke.
"Never give up hope, Miguel. Martin and old Logathang are probably cooking up a plan right now with that tough-looking otter."
Day broke cloudy and gray, with a calm sea and little or no breeze. Romska placed a bowl of some doubtful steaming mess in front of the abbot.
"Get that skilly down, you darl. No sense in starving to death."
The old mouse peered up the corsair from where he sat tethered to the mast. The loss of his glasses affected his poor eyesight.
"Thank you, my child. And thank you also for the kindness you showed to the little bowl maid."
Romska shook her head and laughed.
"I ain't your child, old mouse, and you can't get around me. You shovel those victuals down and pray to the fates that your mates come up with the Emperor's 6 pearls.
Further discussion was cut short as Lask Frildor came hurrying out on deck. The ship had drifted sideways, allowing the Monitor General a disturbing view of the shore.
"Have you no eyes in your head, idiot?"
he snarled nastily at Romska.
"Look landwards."
Romska was about to argue, but a quick glance to the shore gave the corsair great cause for concern. Small warlike creatures in considerable numbers, all wearing bright headbands and sashes with rapiers, stood boldly in plain view on the beach. Pulled up onto the sandy banks of the stream that flowed to the sea were 6 dugout tree-trunk boats, equipped with paddles and single sails. Nearby, on a clump of rocks, were 3 more creatures, a strong-looking mouse with a great sword strapped to his back, a big otter and a lanky hare, both armed with bows and arrows. They were watching a group of the small creatures repairing a ship's longboat by the glow of several small fires. Romska shook her head in disbelief at the scene.
"Stripe me! Where'd that lot come from?"
Lask Frildor paced the deck, tail swishing and teeth bared.
"Who knows? There are enough of them to take this vessel, and they have boats. We are no longer safe anchored here."
Kicking the bowl of food from the abbot's paws, the lizard pulled him as close to the rail as the rope tether would allow.
"Who are those beasts, mouse? Tell me."
Girl squinted at the distant shore.
"Without my glasses, it is difficult to say, though by the bright colors they wear, I would guess they are Gwasom shrews."
Lask brought his face close to the old mouse.
"Warriors?"
Tucking both paws into his long sleeves, the abbot turned sideways to avoid the Monitor General's foul breath.
"Yes, my son. The Gwasom are renowned both on land and water as fierce warriors. Their fighting spirit knows no bounds."
Lask pulled the abbot roughly to him.
"Old fool, I am your enemy, not your son."
Gazing calmly into the glittering reptilian eyes, Durrell said,
"I am an abbot. No beast is my enemy. Why do you not let me go free and sail from here in peace?"
Lask shook the frail mouse savagely.
"I cannot leave without my emperor's pearls. When I have them, then you can go free."
Romska interrupted impatiently.
"Listen to me, mouse, and save yourself a lot of grief. The only way you're leaving this ship is in exchange for those 6 pearls. Now who's got them?"
The father abbot of Redwall shook his head slowly.
"Pearls? Pearls? I know nothing of any pearls."
Romska faced Lask Frildor.
"Well, you heard him. He knows nothing. What are you going to do?"
"Take my word, Lask. Whatever it is, you'd best do it quick.
Look at that crowd on shore. They're getting ready to come out here, and I'll wager it's not to present us with 6 pearls. Make your mind up, lizard. Do we stand and fight, or cut and run?"
The shrewd Trimp put aside a length of caulking rope and patted the side of Graf's longboat.
"That's the best I can do for you,"
She's seaworthy again. But for how long, I don't know. You're pretty rough on boats, matey.
The otter braced the head rope across her shoulders and began pulling her craft down to the stream.
My thanks to you, Gwasim. I hope I can pay you back some day.
Martin and Klecki helped her to launch the longboat at the head of the shrew flotilla. Logalog put both paws to his mouth and gave a long, ululating call, the battle cry of Gwasim shrews.
Log-a-log-a-log-a-log-a-log!
Grath hoisted her sail, while Martin and Klecki used the oars to propel the longboat. Their three different war shouts, joining the shrews paddling behind.
Red Wall! Eulalia!
Holt Lutra! The little war fleet sped from the stream estuary into the waves. Each shrew, armed with slingshots and rapier, bent its back to the oars, spreading into a half-circle, with the longboat at its center. Lashing the tiller dead ahead, Grath made her way to the prow, notching a shaft to her bow. She roared out across the sea to the figures on the deck of Waveworm.
"Release your prisoner or die!"
Lask Frildor cast a meaningful glance at Romska.
"Sail!" he hissed.
Speed was of the essence. The Corsair captain slashed at the anchor line with her sword, bellowing orders to her crew.
"Bring her about, course west! Make sail, full sail!"
Waveworm turned on the swell as her steers rat brought the tiller hard round. Wetting a paw, Romska held it aloft, frowning.
"We need the breeze. They're coming up on us fast."
Lask and his monitors stood astern, long boat hooks and pikes ready should the attackers try to board. The monitor general looked nervously from the oncoming boats to Romska.
"Where is the wind? We need wind in the sails."
Grath Longfletch knew she was within range now. Drawing her bowstring tight, she aimed at Lask and let loose a shaft. Fortunately for the monitor general, the arrow arrived at the very moment Waveworm hit a stretch of choppy water. It struck the lizard standing to his left. The reptile gurgled, tugged at the shaft sticking from his chest, and toppled overboard. Romska balanced in the prow, feeling the ship begin to rise and fall.
"Ha-ha!" she cried. "The breeze is freshening. We'll outsail 'em."
Martin glanced up from his oar at Grath.
"They've got the wind with them now."
Grath tried another arrow, but it was whipped sideways in flight.
"Aye, but so have we, Martin," she said.
Then she dashed amidships and went to work, tightening the lines in their cleats until the single square sail billowed tautly. Logalog was yelling and ranting above the howling gusts.
"Come on, Gwasim, bend your backs, pull! Pull those oars, buckos!"
The shrews strove bravely, battling with their heavy logboats and small sails to keep up with Grath's craft. Waves crashed over the sides of the shrew boats, sending water cascading into them as the wind force built the seas high. Chopping the abbot's tether rope clear of Waveworm's mast, Lask Frildor dragged the old mouse up to the stern gallery. Securing the rope end to the rail, the lizard pushed his prisoner over, leaving him dangling at the aft end above the waves.
"Let them fire arrows now, if they dare," he rasped.
Grath Longfletch threw down her bow in disgust. Then she suddenly flung herself flat on the prow as she heard an ominous noise calling,
"Belay! The mast is gone!"
Crack!
The longboat's mast snapped like a twig, unable to withstand further strain from the gale-tightened sail. Martin found himself enveloped in canvas, being dragged along the boat's bottom as the wind began blowing the loose sail. Klecki was laid flat by the broken mast spar. The warrior mouse struggled madly. Tearing himself free, he whipped out his sword and severed the mast ropes with a few swift slashes. Broken mast, sail, and crossbar went swishing out across the sea like a runaway beast. Grath cradled the unconscious hare's head in her paws, a look of despair on her face as she watched Waveworm pull away with the abbot dangling high astern.
"They've beaten us, Martin. We'll never catch them now."
The warrior mouse brushed seawater from his eyes as he watched the Corsair vessel recede into the watery wastes.
"No, they haven't beaten me. Not yet they haven't."
Logalog gave orders. Lashed together, prow to prow and stern to stern, the small flotilla turned and headed for land. Night had fallen. A beacon fire burned bright on the beach. Viola and four other shrews, who had been left to guard the sea rat, saw the crews come into shore. Heads down, panting and gasping for breath, Logalog and his blossom shrews staggered up to the fire, followed by Martin and Grath, carrying Clecky between them. Saturated by seawater, and exhausted from their battle to reach dry land, every beast flopped wearily around the fire area. Viola and the four shrews hurried about, serving hot vegetable broth and oat cakes as they went. Late into the night, Martin sat at the fire with Logalog and Grath. The shrew chieftain fed fresh wood to the flames and glanced across to where the hare was now sleeping peacefully, wrapped in an old sailcloth.
"That one'll live to eat another day. I never knew a hare that couldn't rise to the sound of a ladle in a cookpot. So, Martin, you're bound and determined to follow the corsairship?"
The warrior mouse watched the flames crackling around a pine log.
"That's right, Logalog. If I have to follow them over the world's edge, and it takes me all my life, I'll bring our abbot back to Redwall Abbey. I swear it on my sword."
26. Like a soft cloak of dark velvet, buttoned and studded with stars, the last night of spring lay soft over the ancient sandstone abbey of Redwall. Lanterns and torches glimmered and flickered in the grounds like fireflies. Tansy hurried up from the pond to where Alma stood in the open doorway of the abbey, calling,
"No sign of those Dibbons yet?"
Pulling forth a large red spotted kerchief, the badger mother dabbed at her tired eyes.
"Not a whisker. It's as if they disappeared into thin air. Here's Wolger. Maybe he'll have some good news for us."
The otter shook his head as he approached them.
"I've tried the gate bar myself, marm. 'Tis too high and far too heavy for Dibbons to lift. Besides, if they'd left the abbey, who'd have locked the gate after 'em? You sure those little rogues ain't inside anywheres?"
Tansy threw up her paws in despair.
"I've searched the abbey 3 times, so have Picknum and Cracklin, and lots of others. Trouble is, there's so many places 3 Dibbons could hide. Ooh, that Arvin, if I get my paws on him!"
Wolger gave a dry chuckle.
"Aye, that's the ringleader, all right. No use getting yourself upset, missy. They'll show up soon as they're hungry enough. It's my guess they've found somewheres snug and fell asleep. All 3 of them, the rogues."
Alma nodded her agreement with the gatekeeper.
"Wolger's right, Tansy. They're obviously someplace in the abbey. After they've had a night's sleep, they'll turn up tomorrow for breakfast, you'll see."
A look of horror registered on Tansy's face.
"Mother Alma, you're not going to bed, are you?"
The badger shook her head vehemently.
"What? Me going to bed while 3 of my little Dibbons are missing? I should say not, missy. I haven't had a full night's sleep since Abbot Durrell and Viola left. I'll sit on some sacks in the kitchens, dozing with one eye open. Mayhap they'll creep in for a stolen snack. I'll be waiting for those villains if they do, and I'll make them sorry for the upset they've caused around here. Believe me, I will."
Wandering indoors, Tansy made her way to Great Hall. As she passed the tapestry of the ancient warrior, she remembered the dream she'd had when Martin told her that the 4th clue was where the 3 babes were hidden. She shook her head worriedly. She was so anxious about the missing Dibbons that she'd almost forgotten about the pearls. Picknum and Cracklin were still searching fruitlessly around the big room's darker corners. Rollo was half dozing in the abbot's chair. He sat up straight as Tansy entered and asked,
"Still no sign of the rogues, eh?"
The hedgehog maid perched wearily on the arm of the chair.
"No. I've just searched around the pond again. What are we going to do, Rollo?"
The old recorder's eyes twinkled slightly.
"The only thing we can do, Tansy, stop thinking like responsible creatures and start thinking like naughty Dibbons. Imagine you were Arvin, Diggum, or Gerbil. Where would you hide if you didn't want any beast to find you?"
Picknum and Cracklin strolled over to join the conversation.
"Down the cellars, maybe?"
"No. Little ones would be afraid down there in the dark."
"What about up in the dormitories?"
"But that's the first place we looked. They weren't there."
A sudden thought struck Tansy.
"I know we've already looked once in the attics above the dormitories, but perhaps we should take another trip up there.
Hardly any beast has been in the attics since Firmald passed away. Arvin sat miserably with the two mole babes inside a cupboard in Firmald's attic. A lantern light glowed in the enclosed space. Gerbil yawned, fighting against sleep.
"I wants to go down. I'm girtly hungered and tired, her."
Arvin had found Firmall's old fishing rod in the cupboard, and now he waggled it in the mole's direction.
"No, no, can't go down, Gerbil. Not now. Look at us'ns. We all filthy and dusty. Wait'll in a mornin', and I catch the bigga fish out the pond, and we cook him and eat him all up."
Diggum inspected her dusty smock sadly.
"Bower-lack-a-day. He badger mum'll have summat to say when her sees oi."
Arvin stuck out his stomach and pulled his little chin in as he did his impression of Alma.
"Just look at you, straight in a bath, you mucky maggots. Great seizings. Where you have been? Straight in a bed, and no suppers. That teaches you naughty dibbins to be more good in a future."
The mole babes laughed at the tiny squirrel's antics. Then Gerbil did his imitation of Sister Cicely.
"You'm never knowed where you'm been. I give ye girt bowls a warm nettle zoop. That'll make ye behave thyselves."
Diggum held one paw to her stomach and the other to her mouth.
"Work! Terrible stuffy warm nettle zoop be. Grrrgh!"
Arvin waved the fishing rod.
"When I big, me gonna make Sis Cicely have nettle zoop every day for her lunch. Ha! That soon make her be sicked."
The three Abbey babes' conversation tailed off, and they huddled together in the enclosed cupboard space. Soon their eyelids began drooping as sleep overtook them. Lanterns glowed, flickering and golden, as Tansy and her two friends ascended the gloomy spiral staircase up to the attics. It was so hushed and still that they found themselves tip-pawing, speaking to one another in subdued whispers. Picknam stood in a pale moonshaft that shone down through the rock-crystal window and gazed around into the dusty darkness. "I'm not so sure the Dibbins had come up here, Tansy," she said. "It's almost as spooky as the cellars at night." The hedgehog maid began casting about with her lantern, peering into corners and recesses.
"Maybe you're right, but it's still worth one last good look. Deary me, imagine living and sleeping up here all alone. How Firmall did that for all those seasons, I'll never know."
Cracklin emerged from a small side chamber off the main room. Holding a paw to her mouth for silence, she beckoned them to her. A knowing smile lit up the squirrel maid's face as she whispered,
"There's a big old wall cupboard in there. Follow me quietly now.
I want you to have a listen and tell me what you hear." Tansy put her ear to the cupboard door, and exchanging knowing glances with her companions, she listened.
"Sounds like three Dibbins snoring to me," she said.
The door creaked as Picknam opened it to reveal the three culprits. Grimy, dust-covered, and deep in sleep, whiskers twitching gently to each squeaky snore. Without further words, Tansy and her two helpers picked the Abbey babes up and carried them down to the sick bay. Sister Cicely, clad in long nightcap and gown, pursed her lips severely at the sight. "Bring them in and put them together in my bed. We'll deal with the villains in the morning." 2 hours after dawn, on the first morning of summer season, it was already warm. Above the eastern horizon, a new gold sun began climbing to preside over a cloudless vault of powder-blue sky. Columns of steamy mist rose from the dense woodlands, rising to the upper air, accompanied by happy trills of sweet birdsong. Out on the flatlands, kingcup and daisy opened delicate petals with silent grace. The first dry rustle of grasshoppers sounded around gorse and firs. It was a good day for any beast to be alive. Well, almost any beast. Clean-smocked, red-eyed, and still smelling of verbena soap, Arvin, Diggum, and Gerbil sat penitently on an upturned wheelbarrow in the orchard, their breakfast foregone for several bowls of Cicely's favorite cure-all, warm nettle soup. A sorrier trio of Dibbins had not graced the Abbey in many a long day. Thoroughly chastened, they sat dangling their footpaws, as Alma, the badger mother, lectured them soundly in front of an audience of old and young. You could have been suffocated in a closed cupboard with a lantern alight in there. Do you realize that? Every beast in Redwall was searching for you from twilight until well after dark. But did you think of letting us know before you went off alone? No. The trouble, worry, and upset you have caused to all is dreadful. It was very naughty of you. Armin, I'm certain you were the ringleader. Have you anything to say for yourself, sir? The tiny squirrel pawed soap and water from his ear. What succophated? Diggum shook her head at the squirrel's ignorance. The word be fusticated. Gerbil interrupted her.
No, it bain't. The word is custifated.
Prior Higgle Stump waved his ladle at them threateningly.
Suffocated, the word is. Suffocated.
And it means that you little rogues would have died in yon cupboard, had it not been for Miss Tansy and her friends finding you. Alma nodded her great head, agreeing with the friar.
Exactly. You're very lucky to be alive. Mrs. Teasel, will you take these three creatures off to the kitchens and find them some chores to keep them busy for the day?
Teasel beckoned the wretched trio of Dibbons to follow her.
I certainly can, Alma. There's always lots of greasy pots, messy dishes, and floors to be scrubbed. Vegetables need peeling, too. I shouldn't wonder. Come on, Dibbons, step lively now.
They were led off, murmuring to each other.
Yug! Girt greasy pots and mucky old floors. Boo-er!
Us had been better off fusticated.
Me was nearly suckified with all of that nettle soup.
When they were gone, Alma turned to the otter gatekeeper. Wolger, would you do me a favor? Take Furlough Stump with you, get hammer and spikes, and nail that attic cupboard shut.
We don't want any more wandering Dibbons hiding in there.
Wolger was about to carry out Alma's bidding when Glenner called out from the northwest wall top.
Two creatures approaching the abbey. Looks like Skipper and the Owl. In need of help, the way they're staggering about.
Alma was up and ambling swiftly to the main gate.
Come on, Wolger. You too, Sister Cicely. Tansy, will you and Rollo see to that cupboard, please?
Rollo waved after the badger.
Aye, you go and look after Skipper and Garrel. Come on, Tansy. And you, Picknum and Cracklin. I'm getting a bit old to be wielding a heavy hammer. It's bad enough having to climb all those stairs.
Picknum held a wooden baton across the cupboard door. Cracklin positioned a spike between the baton end and the door frame, holding her head to one side, and said,
"Go easy with that hammer, Tansy. Mind my paws."
As she was about to strike, Tansy paused. "Find the three babes, and you will know." All at once the words of Martin the Warrior came back to her. She lowered the hammer.
"Move that baton aside," she said. "Let's just check inside the cupboard before we board it up."
The inside of the cupboard was empty, save for Firmall's fishing rod. Rollo held it up, testing the rod's balance, and nodded.
"This is a fine old fishing rod. If I'm not mistaken, it looks like the one that belonged to Martin's grandsire, Matthias.
He was a splendid angler, I've heard say."
"Yes, wonderfully made. See the paw grip? Good stout yew. The rest is made from young crack willow, whipped and bound with waxed flax."
"What's the matter, Tansy?" Tansy took the rod from her friend, the recorder, and inspected the middle part carefully.
"Rollo, lend me your knife a moment," she said.
Mystified, the old bank bull passed Tansy the small quill knife he used for resharpening feather quill pins. The hedgehog maid explained as she worked.
"The middle of this rod has been rebound. I noticed some of the flax looked newer than the rest. So I'll cut through it carefully and unwind it, like this."
Snipping through the binding, she began reeling it off, her voice sounding more excited as she twirled the rod in her paws.
"Ha-ha! I had a feeling we would find something. And I was right. Look, there's a piece of paper underneath this binding."
Thin parchment showed clearly. Picknum caught the flax, tugging it as Tansy twirled the rod swiftly, and the yellowed slip floated to the floor. As it landed, they could all see two words written large on the back. "Well done." The four friends sat on the floor as Tansy turned the parchment over and began to read Fermal's clues to the fourth pearl. 27. Skipper and Garrel ate hungrily, slopping down elderberry and rosehip cordial between mouthfuls of leek pasty and hazelnut cheese. Sister Cicely and Brother Dormal, the herbalist, worked diligently, cleaning and binding their dirt-encrusted wounds. The otter chieftain had told their story to the Redwallers, who crowded into the kitchen. Some of them shook their heads in disbelief at the narrative.
"Great seasons! Skipper slew one of those awful lizards?"
"He ate a skipper of otters for nothing. That un's tough.
Look at that scar down Skip's side."
Skipper chuckled and patted Garrel.
"You should have seen me old mate here. He gave him what for."
Garrel lowered his head, modestly picking crumbs from his feathered chest.
"Ah, it was nothing, sir. As me old mother used to say, leave your enemies like a plate after a good feed. Well licked."
Alma brought a pail of warm water infused with herbs for the pair to bathe weary paws and talons in.
"Would it do any good to raise a force and follow Martin?" she asked.
"He and the hare may be in sore need of help, if they're still trying to rescue Viola and the abbot. What do you think, Skipper?" The otter winced as Sister Cicely snipped away fur from a wound.
"I don't think Martin'd want Redwallers roaming the country looking for him, Marm. I'll send a score of my otters. They'll make it down to the sea, following the streams."
Brother Dormal inspected Gerald's damaged wing gingerly.
"I think your flying days may well be over, friend," he said.
The owl was about to shrug, but thought better of it.
"Ah, well, not to worry, sir. Flying's not everything, you know. Sure, I'll get about just grand on my stout talons. Like me old mother used to say, walking's good as winging, whenever it's wet."
Friar Higgle placed a platter of fruit tarts between Garrel and Skipper.
"At least it hasn't affected your appetite."
Standing on a bench next to an old stone sink, three apron-clad dibbins scoured away at breakfast platters and pots. Arvin glanced across to where Garrel and Skipper were being fussed over and fed. The little squirrel nudged his mole companions.
"Cha! Look at them. They runned away and comed back all mucked up, and every beast's bees nice to 'em. But what happened to us'ns? We only went missing a lickle time and didn't get filthy like that."
The mole babe Diggum scrubbed away half-heartedly at a pot with a wedge of soft sandstone.
"He be right, mate. We em be scalded and put to work her, but they beasts be treated very nice. It might fur."
Gerbil pulled an oatmeal-crusted bowl from the sink.
"Brr, aye. Mayhap if us had stayed away longer and comed back lots dustier, we em be treated good and get nice vittles."
Arvin clenched a chubby paw resolutely.
"Me make a plan. Next time us'ns be lots of brave, run away in a woodlands. Take big bag of foods and weapons. We fight all a bad beasts. Ah, we come back very, very muck filthy. Mud splatty, yerk. Then they be much gladder to see us."
Tansy's voice echoed round the attic as she read Fermald the Ancient's message. It was very complicated, but the four intrepid searchers expected no less.
"My fourth tear I shed for the Abbey Redwall, laid where it never should hatch or fall. Below the mouth of a mouse looking south, all in a deserted dwelling. So sit o'er the maiden hair, gaze up north, and solve what my next words are telling. Put a home with our abbey warrior, north, east, south, at the start. Then, to complete this riddle, add the last thing in my heart."
Tansy shook her head despairingly.
"Well, I've seen some riddles in my time, but this one's a beauty. It's about as clear as a swamp-covered frog. Still, we won't solve it sitting round here."
She jumped up and led the way down the spiral staircase.
"Let's have lunch and spend all afternoon and evening on the puzzle."
By midday it was hot, and the grass was curling and dry, as if spring mists and rains were long gone. Prior Higgle had set up a buffet table in the orchard, and now he sat in the shade of a spreading damson tree with Alma and some red wall elders. The friar gazed up at the thick white masses of flowers crowding the boughs overhead and recited a season poem. When the damson trees crowned white, and wild pear blooms also, I think the season for this sight that lets good creatures know summer is come to shed its gold. Warm days grow long as home oak flowers. The bees hum songs they learned of old, to shorten night's long hours. For spring is fled and summer's come, gather its blossoms and bring me some. Rollo nodded appreciatively, as he nibbled busily at the edges of a raspberry and apple turnover.
That's a nice poem, Higgle. I've never heard it before. Did you write it yourself?
The friar took a deep draught of his October ale.
Bless your no, Rollo. I couldn't write verses to save me spikes. 'Twas Brother Dormal taught it to me. He knows all about poems and seasons and growing things. Old Dormal's a right clever un.
Dormal lowered his eyes modestly, blinking away a white blossom that had fallen on his eyelid.
It's nothing, really. The verses write themselves in my head.
Rollo licked raspberry juice from his chin.
But none knows more than you about growing things, right?
Dormal was a shy old mouse. He shrugged lightly.
I suppose so. I love the things that grow as much as I like to write poetry. Why do you ask? Because I would like to know if we have maidenhair growing anywhere within Redwall. You mean spleenwort?
Dormal corrected.
The recorder shook his head.
No, I mean maidenhair.
Dormal warmed to his favorite subject.
The correct name is spleenwort, though it is also commonly known as maidenhair. It's a wall-growing fern. We do have some growing wild somewheres. Now let me think.
Rollo was about to urge the old mouse to hurry his memory up, when Dormal nodded knowingly and said,
On the inside of the south wall, slap bang in the middle, about halfway up. I called some for Sister Cicely last autumn.
But why do you want to know about spleenwort, Rollo?
Dormal found himself speaking to thin air. Rollo had left. Tansy, Picknum, and Cracklin sat on the upturned wheelbarrow, giggling as they tried to protect their lunch against Skipper and Garrel, whose injuries seemed to have increased their insatiable appetites. Winking both eyes at the three Abbey maids, the owl allowed his talons to rove perilously close to their food. End of Side 4. Change Side Selector Switch. This book is continued on the next cassette.